brain health. The brain is multifaceted, and so are the ways to care for it. Everything we think, do, say, and feel is powered by our brains. And you have control of your own brain health and performance, which is exactly why I urge you to join us. Welcome to Brain Gains, a Holy Youth-produced podcast partnered with the Brain Health Initiative. In this series, you'll learn about your own brain and how to treat it, from teenagers and experts alike. I'm your host, Grace Johnson, a high school student and brain health scholar, excited to learn with you. Hi again, listeners, and welcome back to Brain Gains. This episode marks the second half of our exploration into one of my favorite concepts thus far, cognitive stimulation. In the last episode of Brain Gains, Drs. Michael Mrzenek and Jackie Gamino explained the scientific basis of cognitive stimulation, the brain training that has the ability to vastly improve neural function. Today, we are going outside the laboratory. We're answering the who, what, why, and how questions that come along with cognitive stimulation. So we'll start with who. Who should try cognitive training? Dr. Mrzenek gave us a short answer in the last episode. Everyone. He said cognitive training should be cradle to grave. But our brains are different at different stages in life.
Do you think you could compare and contrast maybe the benefits and the process of cognitive training in the developing brain versus the aging brain?
Sure. Well, because the brain is plastic, we know that no matter when we do any type of cognitive training or really, you know, pushing ourselves to think at a higher level, it's going to be helpful. But when the brain is developing, for example, fourth and fifth graders, you know, they don't have the ability to reason the way somebody who's in eighth, ninth, 10th, 12th grade can. But when we begin to work with students, we begin with sixth grade, the middle school years, and we work all the way through middle school and then on into high school because the brain is very plastic. And so the brain is actually pruning back many of the connections that it really doesn't need. So it becomes more streamlined, but at the same time, it's forming new connections as well. So if we're using our brains in our early years to really think at a deeper level, to push ourselves to go beyond what's the black and white of a situation or the black and white of a text, it really helps form those connections. And that's what's so important about this age in particular, is that it's exciting because we can help form the connections that they can rely on then in the future as well. Whereas older folks are reconnecting those abilities. And it's important to know that the brain, even though it's not a muscle, it's like a muscle. And there's a lot of evidence that if you don't use your brain to its fullest capacity, that you begin to lose some of that ability. You can gain it back. It's just like a muscle. If your muscle begins to atrophy, you can strengthen it and you can strengthen your brain as well, usually throughout the lifetime.
I mean, why would the brain have this sort of reversible plasticity? Go south or go north, go east or go west at the drop of a hat. And the reason it has that, I think, is because the brain basically self-adjusts its machinery so that it mostly gets the answer right. And when it fails to get the answer right, it basically relaxes its processing machinery. It simplifies it so that in the big questions that relate to survival, it mostly gets the answers right. It goes as fast as it can, as refined as it can. It races around and runs circles around things when it can. But when it starts to basically make mistakes, it steps back and takes longer, slows down, sort of relaxes its high-performance characteristics so that it gets the big answers right.
It doesn't matter who you are or what stage of life you're in. Cognitive training makes your brain stronger. It helps your brain make fewer mistakes. Our next question is what? What exactly is cognitive training? We touched on cognitive training in a scientific atmosphere in the last episode. In Dr. Gamino's SMART program, adolescents are exposed to this classic form of cognitive training.
So we start with some really basic executive function like inhibition, and we explain that cognitive process. In neuroscience, cognitive science world, we call it metacognition, when you think about your own thinking. So the metacognitive piece is really important because one of the most important aspects of executive function is what we call cognitive control. And that's just what it sounds like, being able to control your cognition, to think about your own thinking and be able to inhibit information that is irrelevant to what you need to know. If you think about it, we inhibit things all the time. Kids with ADHD, even though it's called an attention deficit, they really attend to too much stuff. They're interested in everything, so their attention is less selective. And so by focusing on things that are more important and showing them how to really inhibit what's unimportant, that helps them with a very basic foundation for learning. Because if you can't selectively focus your attention, it's really hard to learn because your brain becomes overwhelmed with information. So step by step, we walk students through these basic executive functions, and we do that in the first 5 sessions of the program. And then in the second 5 sessions of the program, we actually focus on the higher order thinking skills. So we really take them basically from the inhibition, from being able to paraphrase and make small inferences, to really going deeply into content and thinking about the big picture. There is meaning in everything, absolutely everything. I mean, it's not just in school, but there's meaning in the way that we communicate. There's meaning in our art and storytelling. And we just have to look for it. You know, sometimes we get too hung up on the details. I found this great quote at the Met Museum in New York over the weekend. It was from an artist's perspective about surrealism in particular, but it talked about how you can't just look into a microscope or a telescope. You have to look at both. And to me, that says you can't just look at the details, but you have to look at that bigger picture, the concepts that are embedded in those details. And that's where I think many students get so hung up on the details and trying to memorize that they forget to look for the big picture. They forget to look for those inferencing bigger ideas. And that's where they struggle.
But cognitive training is more than something that can only be done inside of a study or a lab.
Now, you don't have to go to the brain gym. If you did all the right things in everyday life, if you just turned on the brain and really lived life to its advantage, you get everything you need from that everyday life. Take on new important hobbies that broadly engage you neurologically. That's a really good thing to do every so often. And always take improvement seriously. You don't have to stress out about it. Just say, I'm working to be better at this thing that I enjoy doing. Why get stuck in this rut so that I'm never, ever advancing at my ability to play, I don't know, let's say ping pong. I want to get better, right? Just get into that mindset of, I'm going to continually progress in whatever is important to me to do. And I'm going to have a life of continuous new learning, new skill development. I haven't gone to the opera before, but why can't I develop knowledge and information about the opera? And why don't I try to understand on deeper? And maybe I try to sing, for God's sake. You know, I mean, whatever it is, I don't care what it is.
Yeah,
I drive her crazy with this because she calls me the man of 1,000 hobbies, and she calls me because I have also adopted hobbies that many people would think that would be sort of on the feminine side of life. She calls me the farmer and the farmer's wife, but I don't care.
What's your most recent hobby, Ben?
Oh, I have all kinds of them. I'm into trying to get better at making things on a wood lathe, you know, art sculptury kind of things. I've also had a foray in trying to make jewelry and little other objects of art by plating natural objects like flowers or turning something living into something metallic that's beautiful. I always have something new that I'm trying to do. And I think that's really good and healthy to do.
So trying out cognitive stimulation really isn't too difficult. But our next question is why? Why is cognitive stimulation so important? Why should you invest your time in it?
A healthy brain strongly influences processes that relate to physical health. So one of the things that we know from the studies of children that have terrible early lives is that they don't live very long. And they're subject to disease, a whole series of things that relate to cardiovascular health and pulmonary health and renal health, a whole series of things. They're much more likely to have these problems than a person that's had a healthy life. And the reason for that is in part because a healthy brain is influencing organ processes all throughout the body. And basically, we've shown now that we can take a person that's very infirm, train their brain, and improve their body health. All of these things are complexly interrelated. When you exercise a brain, it's good for you, generally good for you. Just like exercising the body is good for you, generally good for you. It's just as important that you exercise your brain as it is that you exercise your body. It's really important that you think about this as an issue of health, and you want to be safer. And really, if you live long enough, Grace, almost everyone has vicissitudes that are neurological in origin. But it's not just about being safer. It's also about being a better, stronger, continuously growing person. If what you are, the person you are, is a function of what you do, then you want to be advancing your brain from the day you're born until the day you die. Why accept going backward? Go forward. You have the power within your skull to have as much information as is recorded on the internet. Get busier loading up those powers and get busy increasing the powers of all of those things that matter to you, is my advice. Think of your brain as a work in progress. Think of you as a work in progress, subject to continuous advance and improvement.
Cognitive stimulation is good for your mind and body. Further, it's more advantageous than other routes you might take to better your mental health.
Psychologists would say, "You seem a little depressed to me, Grace. I think what we need to do is to explain to you that you shouldn't be so depressed all the time." And basically, that's the primary strategy used in psychotherapy. Elevate your spirits, Grace. Don't be depressed all the time. But I would look at it and say, well, the reason, Grace, that you're depressed is because the machinery that's providing the sort of chemical basis of keeping your spirits up and a whole series of other things have changed in your brain because of whatever has led to this reaction in your brain. And those things need to be corrected to actually cure your depression. Now, it turns out that they're quite different. The things that you would address, there's a list of about 10 things. What the psychotherapist addresses is one of those. I would be trying to address 10 of those. 10 for 10 is better. What the pill addresses is one of those. It manipulates the chemistry in the brain so that you elevate that a chemical that is a brightening chemical. And that has a secondary effect of changing the chemistry of a process that controls your level of brightness or darkness about things. You want to fix those. Important to fix those with a chemical or with psychotherapy. But all of those other things, that other 7, 8, or 9 things are not fixed. So my perspective is that the real repair, the revolution that's occurring, is an extension of a wonderful history of psychology and of neuropharmacology in an extension in brain health science that comes from neuroplasticity research. And it's really the integration of these things that's leading to a new era in how we think about giving everyone a better brain, a stronger brain, and a safer brain.
Now that you understand the incredible importance of cognitive training, we ask how. How can you practice cognitive stimulation outside of a lab? As Dr. Mrzenek previously discussed, hobbies are a great way to stimulate your brain beyond the laboratory. But so is learning more about the things you love. For Dr. Mrzenek, that's science.
Besides your plethora of hobbies that you've developed, how is studying neuroplasticity and neuroscience as a whole, how has that impacted your life? Do you have any particular thought on that?
First of all, I just say the love of it. And it's given me insight into how to think about myself and how to think about other human beings and how to think about we humans and how we're designed to operate. It's enriched my perspective, you could say, my understanding of what we humans are all about and how we're designed to live.
How did you start wanting to learn about the brain?
Well, in college, I began thinking about our human natures. for a while, I thought that I might pursue an advanced degree in philosophy. And then I realized that they just always argued and really didn't resolve very much, and that the real answers would probably be found within the skull. I got really excited about the prospect of studying the brain using the strategies that I saw these scientists were deploying there. And so I ended up being trained by a wonderful scientist at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. That was the beginning of my science career. And I was really interested in studying the brain as it accounted for our behavior. And I've enjoyed every minute of it. I can't imagine a more fun thing to do professionally in life than to basically follow your sort of scientific instincts, your curiosity, and ask important questions that are important for your own understanding of things, but also important for and potentially beneficial to people in the world. I have often said that if they'd cut my salary in half, I wouldn't have quit my job. I love my professional career as a scientist. I think it was such a privilege to be paid by the citizens of our great country to do this work that I love so much. There's nothing more wonderful than to come to a conclusion about how things work on a level that no one has understood before. But also, there's nothing more fun than doing this with other really, really intelligent people. Everything I've ever done in science has been teamwork. It's involved teamwork, and usually younger people, because when you're a scientist that's established, you're working with younger people that you're training or working with, you know, they're apprentices to you. What a privilege to be surrounded by smart people, you know, all your life, and to work with them, and to basically apply your collective intelligence to a problem. You know, if I'd have worked all my life alone, I would have done almost nothing useful. But I worked with hundreds and hundreds of bright people, usually younger people, and that's just so much fun. And it's so much fun to see them grow and develop and become established in their own. They will accomplish 1,000 times more than I could ever have accomplished by myself.
Whether you enroll in a cognitive training program like SMART with Dr. Gamino or BrainHQ with Dr. Mrzenek, take up a new hobby, or simply dive deeper into what you love, cognitive stimulation is worth your time. Our brains are incredible, and we hardly use them to their full potential.
It's so fascinating that it is the only organ in our body that we can totally change by how we think and the things that we do, our thoughts. And I think that's really exciting. And it's exciting to think that this information is available to just about anybody, right? Almost anybody with a normally typically functioning brain can do just about anything. And that's really a very cool idea.
I love that idea as well. I actually wrote my college essay kind of on that concept, where once you know that you're able to change something about your brain, I feel like it opens up a whole new world. And I think that's really cool too.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's, I mean, you're in at an exciting time in your brain development because your brain is still developing. And so things that you do now can essentially affect the lifetime, which is, I mean, it's good and bad, right? But,
yeah,
but mostly good if you're using your brain at the highest level.
I'd just like to say that for everyone that might listen, to take your brain seriously and take your brain health seriously and think of yourself as you really are. And that's a work in progress. You are a work in progress. The extent to which you think you might be failing in life, you might be very good at things in life, get over it. Get over it. You can change your progression. You can change where you're at in life at the drop of a hat. So do it. You know, think about where you want to go and think about what you want to be and think about what you want to be good at and begin the process of getting there. The brain evolves as you evolve, and you have this incredible gift, these incredible powers to change your performance abilities in life. So get busy and change them if you're not happy with life. And in any event, always think about your life as a life of continuous growth. Why would you ever think about it any other way?
Thank you so much to Drs. Michael Mrzenek and Jackie Gamino. This podcast is possible in part thanks to the Brain Health Initiative, a study working to build a brain-healthy Florida Sun Coast and beyond, featuring collaborative leadership from the Academy for Brain Health and Performance, as well as Massachusetts General Hospital, a Harvard Medical School teaching hospital.
Please visit brainhealthinitiative.org if you are interested in learning more about the Brain Health Initiative or its academic youth program, the Brain Health Scholars. Thank you so much for tuning in today and listening to Brain Gains, hosted and produced by Grace Johnson.